Supervisor Avalos, I'm just wondering, you know, now we're a little past the election. What are your reflections on how well you did? You came in second. You lost to Mayor Lee, but you did quite well and are now being touted as, you know, the city's leading progressive voice.
Well, I feel, you know, a bit rested, a week out from the campaign. I feel really proud of the campaign that we were able to put together. Very positive campaign. It was very diverse. It represented working class, middle class values and interests, communities of color, immigrant rights. The volunteers were in the thousands who came out for the campaign over the past few months. And I was really proud of just how we were able to rise in the next in the last 5 weeks of the election in a way that people didn't expect. We had started the race thinking that we would be able to get to two, and we'd be in striking range of the top vote. And I think we were challenged in the middle months of the campaign through June, July, and August to be able to really get to that level of pushing up to the number one spot. It's really based on people paying attention to the election and based on the kind of fundraising and staffing you can build on fundraising in those middle months. And we weren't able to get there as well as we would have liked.
But you did get to number two.
We got to number two. And we worked hard to get to number two. And I'm really proud of my staff and the volunteers. It was just really brilliant people who worked there without a lot of resources, too. We didn't do it with a lot of, you know, a lot of money. Our donations for the campaign, 90% of them came from San Franciscans, and the average donation was about $100. It's really hard for, you know, someone representing working class, middle class folks in San Francisco to win number one spot in the mayor's race. We didn't have any real belief that it was going to be an easy shot to do, okay? We knew we could actually work really hard to at least get the number two spot, and we did. Wanted to win.
Were you surprised at the low voter turnout?
That was actually pretty disconcerting, pretty surprising. And, you know, there was, from the perspective of someone who's campaigning, and everywhere you go, the whole city seems to be, you know, blowing up and energized about the campaign. Because you have a candidate forum every night and there's packed rooms every night. But then you go out in the neighborhoods and you see the people, you know, a lot of people aren't paying that much attention. You actually are talking to voters for the very first time about the issues when you're out one-on-one on the street or in cafes talking to people. So, you know, there was a sense that there was a lot, it was a sleeper election, especially in those middle months. I think it's hard to say what led to people, you know, staying at home. I mean, I think people, there's a sense in San Francisco, probably around the country, that people feel a little bit let down by politics, in electoral politics. There's a huge, I think, amount of hope that was out there about Obama creating, you know, major changes and hasn't kind of lived up to what the, you know, intense expectations were of people. And I think people feel a little bit let down. That might keep suppress people's enthusiasm for getting out in electoral politics. The fact that we had 16 candidates who were running, I think, was really difficult for people to kind of discern who they liked, who they didn't like. I think, you know, part of it, Ed Lee jumping in the race when he said he wasn't going to jump in or wasn't going to be, you know, running for mayor also probably dampened some people's spirits about, you know, what's this
all about. Did it dampen
yours? For a weekend. I mean, when I saw, well before he jumped in the race, I said, oh, Ed Lee's going to be running. And it was like in May. I saw him at all these events in one weekend. It seemed like he was on the campaign trail, not just being mayor. And that weekend I felt, you know, pretty upset about it. But then I figured if he's going to do it, we're going to have to run a campaign and we'll just have to deal with that.
And you did pretty well. So how do you feel about instant runoff, ranked choice voting?
Well, I'm not looking back and saying, oh, if only we had, you know, a runoff that we would do it. I, you know, came to this race knowing we had a system that was a ranked choice voting system. And I ran my campaign expecting that we would have an outcome that would be a ranked choice voting outcome. If we had a regular runoff that's in most municipalities, I would, you know, expected that. I'd be in the middle of campaigning right now. I'm kind of, you know, I'm pretty ambivalent about right now. I want to look at how get some analysis about how the votes went and how I did in my own district. I haven't really seen how I did in my own district in terms of ranked choice. Like, did I have a lot of votes from people who support Ed Lee that didn't get counted, that I want to consider how things went? I've been a supporter of ranked choice voting. As a candidate versus being a voter, I saw that it really made it difficult to get decisive endorsements, for a candidate to get decisive endorsements from political clubs and individuals. You would see clubs and individuals kind of diffuse their support for candidates and diffuse their support for candidates across, you know, the political spectrum. I was supported by SEIU 10-1. Clearly, I'm like one of the most progressive candidates after, say, probably Terry Baum. And then they also supported Bevin Dufty, who is not one of the most progressive candidates. So you don't see like an organization that can really just, you know, throw all its weight behind one person anymore. You throw it around, and it makes it very difficult for the voters to decide. So those are, as a candidate, I question like how effective it is for us to be able to create that real, singular effort that's going to drive people to a particular candidate or not. It kind of spreads it around. And I think that was the intent behind it. But, you know, I'm not sure, if, you know, from my perspective, it worked as effectively. Now, this other thing that people talk about, that it's confusing, people don't understand it. I actually don't think it's that confusing. And if you explain to people, you aren't very confused. But there was this whole effort, I saw a lot of columnists in the Chronicle saying it's confusing, and then you see people out in the community saying it's confusing, and there's this whole kind of echo chamber, I thought, that was created to undermine it. But we've had it since 2004, and it was only because people couldn't predict the outcome of the election, because there were a lot of variables in the ranked choice vote, strategy that people didn't like the idea of moving forward in the future with ranked choice voting.
When you say people, you mean like
strategists and the media people and the Chronicle and the establishment. When the establishments are going to back candidates like Ed Lee, and they're going to back candidates like Gavin Newsom. Gavin Newsom was running in 2007. Well, Gavin Newsom had a huge advantage. People weren't talking about whether we should have ranked choice voting or not, because they could predict that Gavin Newsom was going to win the election. But when it was very difficult to really predict that Ed Lee or whoever was going to run the election was going to win the election, then you start, questioning whether ranked choice voting is what we should really have.
That's Supervisor John Avalos. He just came in second place in the recent San Francisco election for mayor, and we're speaking with him about that election. So go ahead.
There was something else that happened with ranked choice voting. There was this effort by Mark Farrell. They're putting a charter amendment. Mark Farrell and Sean Ellsberg are putting a charter amendment on the ballot to repeal ranked choice voting. They introduced that charter amendment on the same day as the election. And basically that, introducing a charter amendment to repeal ranked choice voting on the same day of the election undermines the legitimacy of that election even before that the vote has been closed. And I took really, I was really upset about that, that you would, in the middle of the same day, you would work towards repealing this, before you even have all the facts in place about it. The facts are already, these folks have decided that they're against it. But I think in terms of process, it makes a lot more sense to do it, once the election is done, and rather than, questioning even before the votes are counted, what the legitimacy of the election is.
And that's San Francisco Supervisor John Avalos. He is he just came in second place in our recent election for mayor of San Francisco. How do you feel about public financing in retrospect?
Oh, I'm a big believer in public financing. Public financing actually really enables a lot of people who typically wouldn't be supportive of candidates to support candidates with their dollars. And my campaign was a real clear illustration of that. We were able to get donations from, babysitters, from urban farmers, from typists, from clerks, from teachers, really grassroots dollars that people saw that they can give a small donation of $25 and that would bring in, public financing matches. That was huge. And it got people thinking that they could actually make a difference with their, donations, and not just have the people who are the most wealthy fund elections, and they could actually be part of that political process. I really think that was the best thing I saw that came out of public financing from my perspective as a candidate. I believe in public financing also enables candidates like myself who aren't really going to go after to get the big money, to be able to have real strong grassroots campaigns that can promote a message that supports working class and middle class people who typically don't get their issues to be talked about and discussed in the discourse of an election.
And what's the atmosphere like on the Board of Supervisors and with the relationship with Mayor Lee now?
I think we're in kind of a tenuous space right now. I mean, everyone, we start out the year with good relationships with Ed Lee. But as we go through the political process of, you know, legislative work in the board, Ed Lee's vetoed some legislation that's been key, like the healthcare security ordinance amendments that Supervisor Campos was proposing, setting up clear distinctions between the administration's point of view on healthcare security, on healthcare in San Francisco, to some members of the Board of Supervisors. So we're seeing some lines being drawn and unclear where they're going to go. I think that we're going to see the battles escalate in the future. And this whole kind of honeymoon period about Ed Lee, you know, getting things done and working civilly in San Francisco, well, it's going to be back to business as usual. We have, you know, huge, you know, tensions around how we're going to support people in our communities versus the wealthiest people in San Francisco. I don't believe like giving tax breaks to every business that wants to set up here in San Francisco is going to support all the other people in our communities all around San Francisco. And those are battle lines are going to continue as we, you know, move forward. I think we can have cordial discussions in the Board of Supervisors and
really?
At City Hall. I believe so. I believe that the public expects that. I want to be able to have discourse that's like that. But we can also disagree on things, too. And my conversation with Ed Lee when we talked after the election was like, you know, the tension is necessary for us to be able to, you know, strengthen our work on policy development in San Francisco. And if we don't have the tension, we can't, you know, We can't create, you know, I think, stronger public policy. We can't, you know, build, you know, the kind of support for our ideas that we want to be able to build. And I think that I welcome that process.
So what are your priorities for the next year?
Well, I want to start the process of looking at the municipal banks. We're exploring that. I drafted the local hire ordinance last year, and I want to make sure that we're implementing that well. And there's a lot of work to do that effectively on the workforce training aspect of things. I want to look at progressive revenue. We have a year 2012 where we can actually put a new revenue measure on the ballot, taxing some of the wealthiest interests in San Francisco so we can everyone can benefit from our services in the city. And so I'm looking at a new business tax, moving from the payroll tax to another tax, like a gross receipts tax. A lot of the candidates talked about that as we were campaigning. It's something I'm committed to and work with my colleagues to make sure that we can, you know, put something on the ballot, and that'll be revenue generating as well. I need to focus on stuff in my district. I have huge issues of blight. I want to support small businesses. I want to support our Rec and Park and our families that are struggling in the city. And I'm running for supervisor next year.
So you get to go back into campaign mode.
Out of the frying pan, into the fire.